House Committee for April 1st, 2015. In the order that we're going to do, we're going to kind of open things up and close things up. We've got some work sessions. And so if it's okay, we're going to start out with House Bill 3494 or 93. Representative Buckley. And if you could read it, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 3493 provides that the Superintendent of Public Instruction and the State Board of Education may not make or authorize certain calculations related to aggregate days membership and weighted average daily membership, except as specified by statute, declares an emergency effective July 1, 2015.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Buckley.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair, members of the committee. I'm Representative Peter Buckley. I represent South Jackson County and the legislature. Thanks for your kind consideration of House Bill 3493. My apologies after the intro and then get out of here because I'm supposed to be elsewhere. But I appreciate your consideration of the bill. It quite simply, if I can frame it this way, I have tremendous respect for people like my co-chair, Senator Devlin, and the House Subcommittee Education Co-Chair, Representative Kopp, who put together the task force on the school and state school fund formula, have done so much work on it. And the basic premise of this bill is any changes to the formula, it needs to be clarified, those are changes done at the legislative level, not done at the department level. Just to clarify, that is the system we have in place. As you know, Chair Doherty, the formula it has many, many moving parts. When you change it, there are clear winners and losers. There are areas that we've all been supportive of changes in terms of regard to poverty, weights for districts, etc. But it needs to be done in a thoughtful way. It needs to be done in a way that has buy-in from the legislature. We are elected by our constituents. We represent school districts throughout the state. So it needs to be a process that's thoughtful, that's worked out through the legislative process. And again, as the division of authority in state government there's always a tension between the different branches of government. This bill just attempts to clarify very, very clearly that the authority for any changes in the state school fund formula rest with the legislature and not the executive branch. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Ms. Wimmer?
Madam Chair and committee members, for your record, Lori Wimmer, representing 42,000 members of the Oregon Education Association. And as requesters of this bill, we, of course, support it. What gave rise to this particular issue was an interim proposal to change the rules of how we calculate one full FTE for the purposes of distributing the state school fund. That was a Department of Education proposal that the stakeholders all had some grave concerns about. You'll hear from some of my colleagues later about their thoughts on that as well. You have my written testimony. I won't go into a lot of detail on that, but I do give you a lot of detail about what the rule was, why we objected, and the question became when I asked the department to cite their authority to make policy changes. It was the directive to distribute the state school fund and to collect data so that they could do so accurately. To me, that's the what, not the how. And the how is your purview from our perspective. And so we just wanted to bring the matter forward so that we could get further clarity on that piece, on who's accountable to the public, who's accountable for those kinds of policy decisions. And that's what 3493 attempts to do. We have -1 amendments that we thought were responsive to some concerns raised by the Department of Education. I think they'll talk to you more about those. They've since brought forward a couple others, and we are certainly open to any kind of -2 amendments that might be necessary to make sure that we are not changing the way the distribution of resources is currently transpiring with respect to homeschoolers and part-time students and so on. We simply don't want what they call the tenths model or other kinds of policy changes to be their purview. We think it's best if it's yours.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions? Okay, so basically we don't change a formula. The legislature does that. It's not done by rule in an agency.
Yes, Madam Chair.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions? Okay, seeing none. Thank you very much. Did we have anyone else signed up for the House bill? Okay. Do we need to gavel back in on this one?
We will have to, yeah.
Okay. We're going to temporarily gavel out on House Bill 3493 and open up a public hearing on House Bill 2412. Representative Taylor?
Madam Chair, is it okay if the other two folks in
sure.
support come up?
Sure. Yes. And if you could please read what the bill is.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2412 removes outdated provisions and updates terminology related to teachers. It removes requirements that the superintendent of education service districts have additional certification. It eliminates a number of requirements. The committee's been asked to consider the Dash 4 amendments, which clarify statutory language pertaining to educator prep programs and requires the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission to adopt standards related to dyslexia education programs.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Taylor.
Thank you, Chair Doherty and members of the committee. I'm happy to, for the record, I'm Kathleen Taylor, representative from House District 41, which is Southeast Portland, Milwaukee, and Oak Grove. Very happy to be here today. Thank you for having us. This bill is a result of a collaborative effort between Decoding Dyslexia, and I must admit, one of my constituents, Jen Cafalanga, and Vicki Chamberlain, as you know, is the executive director of the TSPC. So thank you for the opportunity to speak to you about HB 2412, the Teacher Standards Practices Omnibus Bill, and a special thanks to Vicki Chamberlain for supporting the Dash 4 amendment that you should have there with you. Some of my constituents and members are members of Decoding Dyslexia, a national organization focused on improving the educational experience of students with dyslexia. In addition to assessment and continuing education for teachers, Decoding Dyslexia has identified increasing teacher preparation as a top priority. After a great hearing on Senate Bill 612 in the Senate Education Committee, it was decided that the teacher training piece of Senate Bill 612 would be better placed in House Bill 2412. TSPC is in agreement, and I encourage your adoption of the Dash 4 amendment. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair Doherty, members of the committee. My name is Jennifer Cafalanga, and I'm a parent, educator, and member of the Decoding Dyslexia community. I'm here to testify in support of this bill. Most of us have heard the term dyslexia, so it's shocking to realize that as a state, we have no real strategy to address this learning difference. What the National Institutes of Health tells us in replicated independent longitudinal studies is that dyslexia affects 1 in 5. That in terms of Oregon's K through 12 students, that's 113,000 students. At Decoding Dyslexia, we receive emails from all over the state and give advice from Bend to Burns, Talent to Tillamook, and Portland to Pendleton. There is an area of our state that escapes the repercussions of this neurological learning difference. Affluent families provide private tutoring while others cannot, and this is an equity issue. Because we have no real strategy to address the needs of these bright, capable learners, information about dyslexia identification and intervention is almost currently absent from our teacher education programs. The result is that our teachers are not able to identify and effectively teach 20% of their students. As a regular education science teacher with special education credentials, I had hundreds of students who displayed the red flags for dyslexia, and it was heartbreaking to watch them fall through the cracks. As a parent of a child with dyslexia, it was maddening that I couldn't teach him to read. I'm not alone in my lack of training. Decade after decade of research shows teachers are not getting the training they need to teach children with dyslexia to read and write. This is as true in Oregon as it is nationally. This HB 2412 Amendment 4 begins to rectify this problem by requiring that education preparation programs for teachers provide instruction on dyslexia and that this instruction be consistent with best practices. Dyslexia touches many. Some statistics, more than 38% of children with learning disabilities drop out of high school compared to 11% of the general population, and 48% of prisoners have been identified with dyslexia. I urge you to support this bill and amendment so that the education programs can begin to provide instruction on dyslexia for teachers.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Chamberlain.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Vicki Chamberlain, the Director of Teacher Standards and Practices Commission. Regarding the dyslexia provisions, the portion of Senate Bill 612 that we think will have the biggest impact on the education community and our future teaching workforce is to make dramatic changes to teacher preparation. And so how we've set up the amendments is in a manner that would aggressively require the programs to come back to the commission and report specifically what adjustments they're making in programs that have young readers and where teachers are learning to teach young readers and how they are specifically addressing dyslexia. The thing that we've learned throughout this testimony is that this population of children don't necessarily qualify for special education services, and having a need to adapt the skills of people who don't teach in the special ed environment that teach all across the age ranges where they're learning readers need to have the skills to identify and help direct children appropriately with dyslexia. So we've also provided a provision where we will come back and report to you about how the preparation has gone and what the universities are doing to incorporate this into their programs.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Representative Hack.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So who will be determining the dyslexia, the disorder? Will it be the behavioral specialist? Will then that be referred on to an IEP process? How will that work?
In Senate Bill 612, we're looking at identifying risk factors for dyslexia, not necessarily diagnosing dyslexia, but identifying the risk factors and teaching to bring up those low areas so that they would never fall and have the need for an IEP.
Follow up?
Yes, please.
So who will identify the risk factors, and when does that start?
We're working on that section of the bill, but kindergarten, first grade screening.
Okay, thank you.
Yes.
Okay, and then with this, that's the Senate bill section, and
yes,
with this section here, it's that the teacher preparation institutions will, as part of their curriculum for teacher education, or educator preparation, will teach them about diagnosing or working with dyslexia. Okay, Representative Barreto.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I may have misunderstood this, but did you say one out of every five is affected by dyslexia?
National Institutes of Health say one out of every five. It's a spectrum, so from mild to severe, but one out of five are on the spectrum.
Do you have a follow-up?
Mm-hmm.
So what would be a mild and what would be a severe?
Mild might be someone who reads below grade level. They're able to read, but maybe slower. So they have a hard time keeping up. Writing is more labored, takes a long time. They're still very frustrated by school and underperform to their intelligence level. Severe would be a child who cannot learn to read and write without specific instruction.
Okay.
Okay.
The first one would have been me when I was growing up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you so much for bringing this to our attention. I think it's really, really important. And I'm just wondering if you think that this might have an impact on why we're lagging in having our children ready to read by third grade. And this hasn't been a big priority for us. So I'm just curious if you think that's part of our problem.
I do, and I think states like Virginia that have implemented early intervention screening are doing a lot better on their reading programs and their reading rates.
Well, thank you for bringing this to our attention.
Can I?
Any other questions? Representative Reardon and Representative McLean.
For anybody, what's the earliest age that it would be recommended to do this screening? Kindergarten seemed like an obvious target, but we're moving toward earlier childhood education. Seemed like the earlier the better.
There are indicators as early as preschool. Reliable diagnostics are 92% accurate at age 5 and a half, but there are preschool indicators that are very reliable also.
Chair Doherty, members of the committee, but however, for the Senate Bill 612, which has some of the other components of what we're working on regarding implementing dyslexia training, identification, assessment, and all of this, it will be for kindergarten, first and second grade is our goal in the Senate Bill 612, because obviously the ODE is not going to be overseeing the preschools. So the Senate Bill, I think, will be just addressing the kindergarten, first and second grade.
Okay, thank you. Representative McLean.
I was looking at this material, and I think you and I have talked about it. Now, this is basically going to be connected to the reading programs in preparation colleges for teachers, correct? So it's just part of another tool in the toolbox to help with teaching reading.
Evelyn, we're doing this one.
Okay.
Chair
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Vicki Chamberlain again, if I may really quickly. Related to this bill is one more set of amendments that would remove the provisions related to the Minority Teacher Act out of our bill so they could be more fairly considered in House Bill 3375.
Okay, fine. Thank you. Okay, any other questions of this panel? Okay, seeing none. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Do we have others speaking on this one?
Okay.
But I think we moved gavel out again. Okay, as I said, this is kind of a little frenetic day here today, and so what we're going to do is temporary gavel out and close the public hearing on, was this concurrent? On House Bill, public hearing on House Bill 2412, and then we're actually going to open up a work session on House Bill 2955. Richard, if you could.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2955 directs the Department of Education to administer processes for providing funding for activities related to annual conference dedicated to Oregon Civics and held on Oregon Civics Day for teachers. It appropriates monies from the general fund to the Department of Education for the purpose of the conference. It declares an emergency elective effective July 1, 2015. It has a subsequent referral to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means, and some of the public presenters from this measure are in the audience today.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's kind of you timed your field trip perfectly, because the two ladies that from West Sylvan that spoke on the Civics Day and how exciting it was and what they've learned from it happened to be here today as we hopefully pass this out of committee onto the floor. So with that, Representative Frederick.
Chair Doherty, I move House Bill 2955 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Okay, Representative Frederick moves House Bill 2955 to the floor with a due pass recommendation that it be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Is there any discussion? Representative Springer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Forgive me for pulling up the bill. I like this bill a lot, and I like what this bill does a whole lot. I just want us to be mindful of one thing, and something I looked into as we talked about this. There is only one conference in the state. So really what we are doing, and I'm certainly voting yes on this, is what we're doing is voting for this conference, but there is only one conference.
Yes.
And there's only one organization. I would love to see options there, mm-hmm. and I'd like to see those created. But certainly, given the bills we've heard about civic engagement, about testing, the neutralization test, different pieces, I think this is a step in the right direction.
Yeah, thank you very much. Thank you. Any other questions or comments and discussion? Representative Reardon.
I agree that it's only one conference, but I know that those teachers are, you know, students are preparing most of the year for that. And my only concern, because I just totally believe in that, my only concern is in light of our overall education budget, you know, we're always mindful of things that cost money
right.
and are extras, but I know that that's not our role. We identify things that are wonderful,
yes,
supportable. And that's why I want to vote for this today, but let the people in Ways and Means answer the rest of the question.
Mm-hmm. And this is the one that we pass out policy committees.
We do.
We're a policy committee, so we come up with the ideas and the policy, and then we pass it on to Ways and Means, and they're the ones that have the money or not have the money, and they're the ones that finally decide whether it's going to go forward. So that's what we do. Any other further discussion? Okay, seeing none. Tia, could you read the roll, please?
Representative Barreto?
Aye.
Representative Pack?
Aye.
Representative McLean?
Aye.
Representative Caluso?
Aye.
Representative Reardon?
Aye.
Representative Wilson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Frederick?
Yes.
Vice Chair Springer?
Maybe making a statement of law.
Aye.
Yeah.
Aye. Okay, with that, the motion passes. And so House Bill 2955 will be sent on to Ways and Means. Okay, with that, we close the work session. Thank you, ladies. Close the work session on House Bill 2955. And which one are we going to reopen?
Do I go back to the first one?
And what we're going to do is go back to the first bill. We're going to reopen House Bill 3493. And that was the one on...
Too many pieces of paper. Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3493 was the bill that Representative Buckley and Ms. Wimmer just spoke to about that the superintendent of public instruction and the state board being prohibited to authorize calculations related to aggregate days membership and weighted average daily membership.
Got it. Okay. And so the other people we had signed up to read, Michael Elliott, Emily Nussbaum, and then we can have Chuck and Chuck Bennett and Morgan Allen come up when they're finished. Okay, thank you. Would you give that, Richard?
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Michael Elliott with the Oregon Department of Education. I apologize for my really bad handwriting. It's Emily Nazara from the Department of Education.
Oh, thank you.
And that was totally my handwriting. I saw it as soon as you started struggling with it.
And this is bad because I used to work for doctors, so.
So the Department of Education here is to talk about 3493, provide some context and history as to what the State Board of Education was doing with its proposal, why it was, and then illustrates just bring up some concerns we have with the bill. We have provided these concerns with the sponsors and look forward to reviewing future amendments. So in history, right now, current law says that aggregate days membership, which is what average daily membership is based on, which is one of the weights in the formula, so aggregate days membership is determined by State Board of Education rule. So within that framework, the State Board of Education has adopted rules to determine how we're going to count students for purposes of funding. And there's several types of programs and part-time and several calculations that we do to try and be as accurate as possible when we're counting students. If this committee remembers, an average daily membership, one average daily membership equals one student attending a school for an entire year at one district. If the student moves districts throughout the year, then they would get a partial ADM at both districts because both districts provided a partial services for that student during the school year. There's other categories of students that within average daily membership also receive partial weights or partial FTE or full-time equivalency. One example are part-time programs. These are usually alternative education programs, credit recovery programs, and they, even if a student attended them for every time that the program was in operation, they still would not have enough hours to meet the minimum hours of instruction required. Again, they're designed for students that have, you know, different life circumstances, need some alternative options. So those part-time programs under rule are calculated to provide a fraction of an ADM. Another example would be homeschool programs. A district may, at their discretion, allow homeschool students to take several classes at their district, whether it be band or choir to get that group experience, or maybe advanced math or science classes, whatever. If a district allows a homeschool student to come in, the district can enroll the student for those classes and receive a partial ADM for that student because they are providing education services for that student. So they would get a part of an ADM. These are all established by rule with the authority granted under ORS 327-006. So giving that correction, and then the biggest issue was right now, if a student is attending a full-time program, so let's say I enroll my daughter in a regular school, grades 1 through 5, but I only have her go half-time because I want to, I don't know, I feel like homeschooling's better or she's got a learning disability or whatever, she would get a half of a weight. She would get a half of an FTE because she attended half-time or less. If she attended more than half-time, she would get a full weight. So you have students where they may be attending 3/4 time or 0.6 time or 0.8 time getting a full FTE for funding purposes. And the goal of the 10th proposal, as presented to the State Board of Education, was to try and be more accurate in the distribution of funding. So that's what the 10th proposal would have done. It said, okay, for those students attending 0.8 or 0.9 or 0.7, they would get that FTE equivalent, and that's what they would be funded on. Now, the State Board of Education ultimately decided not to adopt the 10th proposal. There were three very big concerns that stakeholder groups brought to the State Board. One was it would really destabilize the districts. As we know, districts need stability in their funding. They need to be able to count on funding not changing from day to day or month to month. And they really said this would be very destabilizing to them. The second concern they brought up was that ODE didn't have enough fiscal information. We would be asking for significant programming costs from each district and their student information systems to change from what is currently set in rule to what the new proposal would be, and we needed a lot more information about that. And the third was the goal of providing incentives to districts to provide full-time schedules for students would be met through other rules and other instructional hours. So the TENS proposal was pulled back by the State Board of Education. So House Bill 3493, what it's trying to do, or what, as we read it, the concerns we have are, one, we're not sure that it prohibits the State Board from adopting rules because that authority comes through statute currently, and this doesn't change that statute. If it is intended to eliminate the TENS proposal, then, like we said, we can work with, we can provide these concerns to the sponsors to make sure that current calculations of part-time programs of homeschool students and the current half and full-time are kept in rule because that is what currently is being done by districts. So that's why we're here, is to just share some concerns with the bill, give you some history and context to what was going on, and I'm happy to answer any questions, and if you want to add anything. Emily Nazarov is the expert on the State Board.
Oh, for the record, Emily Nazarov with ODE, and I am, at the time we considered the TENS proposal, I was the board administrator for the State Board and worked on the proposal that was presented to the board, so I'm happy to answer any questions.
Okay, thank you. Representative Springer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This might sound like an odd question. What defines half-time? Is it, I mean, we have a lot of variables there. So how does a district determine halftime?
Madam Chair, Representative Springer, Vice Chair Springer, under rule, halftime is defined as a student attending for less than or equal to half of a full school day.
Follow up.
Yes.
So is a full school day, bell rings in the morning to bell rings in the afternoon? Is recess in that? Is it not? I'm trying to get a feel if we're talking 2.5 hours or if we're talking 4 hours.
Right. Madam Chair, Vice Chair Springer, a full school day is usually defined by district because some have, you know, flex schedules or a block scheduling. But yes, it is usually bell to bell. Recess would be included. So you think bell to lunch would be a half day. If they stay past lunch to maybe do PE, they would be more than a half day.
So then districts would be free to define their day, therefore their half day, the way they chose. Change their definition.
Chair Doherty, Representative, Vice Chair Springer. No, I misspoke. I mean, it's defined in rule.
Okay.
So that's where the district doesn't just get to say. I'm saying that we look at a district schedule that they set up. So if they set up an 8-hour day, then a half day would be 4 hours. If they set up a 6-hour day, then a half day would be 3 hours. So they don't get to define what half is. They just get to define what a full school day is using their scheduling system and what's best for their district.
Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Representative McLean.
I had two questions. First of all, can you give me that ORS again?
Certainly. Chair Doherty, Representative McLean, it's ORS 327006. And it's in the definitions, and it's sub 1, which defines aggregate days membership.
Thanks. Mm-hmm. And then the second question is, how often do you readjust? Do you readjust once a year, twice a year, three times a year? How often do you readjust, since you indicated that this may be an issue or a problem because of moving students?
Chair Doherty, Representative McLean, there are 4 times where we collect average daily membership data. There's 4 periods. So period 1, period 2, period 3, and period 4/annual. And so every quarter, a district is reporting to the Department of Education what their student population looks like for that quarter. And for the part-time programs, we have set calculations they use for each quarter to determine what amount of FTE an individual student is getting. But it's set by the end of the year. So at the end of the year, we look and say, okay, this student attended this school for the entire year, or no, this student actually left halfway through the year because they reported in second period in, you know, District A, and, you know, in third and fourth period, they're reporting in District B.
Madam Chair?
Please follow up.
Another part of that then would be, I mean, you're not in, you, to make sure that it's a rule issue versus a legislative issue, you can't change weighting. And so the situation is that when you're making those adjustments, okay, how do you account for the student as a 1 or a 1.5 or a 2? How do you keep that calculation, you know, the same?
Madam Chair, Representative McClain, if you're talking about the weights, it depends on which weight specifically. If you're talking, for example, the ESL weight, that follows the student.
Yeah.
So, in a sense, we're not changing the half weight. At the end of the year, a student attending a full-time program for a year is going to get half a weight. However, if they moved halfway through the year, one district may get a quarter, you know, half of that half weight or a quarter weight, and one district may get the other half of that half weight or quarter weight. But we're not changing the full weight that student receives. We don't change the legislatively determined weights. For the special education weight, it's based on the December special education child count, which is a one-time count of the students in the state by district for their special education. And for the poverty weight, I'm just naming the big four, the big three. For the poverty weight, it's based on a yearly data set provided by the U.S. Census Bureau.
Okay. The reason I'm asking that is because, you know, depending on the, Madam Chair, mm-hmm. is depending on how many times you counted and where you're paying, you know, that's where there's some difference in my mind about is the adjustment really changing, you know, changing the formula, or is it really just an adjustment?
Madam Chair, Representative McClain, I think I can answer by kind of walking through a little bit how the state school fund formula works on a calendar basis. Mm-hmm. So the state school fund is paid on estimated data. The districts provide this department with estimates of how many students they think they'll need or how much ADM they think they will need. We are also estimating all of the other weights. Then by statute, halfway through the year, we switch those estimates from district-supplied estimates to the second period ADM. So by statute, we do that. And then finally, the last adjustment as far as the weights go and as far as the student counts go is when we do a reconciliation, again authorized by statute, that says how much were you paid, how much should you have been paid now that we have our actual data, and we reconcile those two differences. So any weight changes that I think you're referring to are, we're not changing it, we're going along with what statute requires. Mm-hmm. So what the rule was trying to do is try to be more accurate and say, rather than should a part-time student get a full weight or zero weight, provide some flexibility mm-hmm. and some clarity to say, well, a part-time student shouldn't get a full weight, but a district shouldn't get no money for providing services to the student. So, and that's what current rules allow for part-time programs, the homeschool, that sort of thing. And again, the TENS proposal was and ultimately not decided by the board.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. That was good information.
Okay. Representative Reardon.
Help me here. I'm just lost at what we're trying to do here. And I'm trying to get really clear and very concise about, are we changing the process for, you know, who makes the rules? And when and how calculations are changed, and are we, is that's what I read, that's what I thought we were talking about, is who makes the rules, mm-hmm. And when they are made, and so that's where I'm just.
So Chair Doria, Representative Reardon, I think everybody agrees we're not changing the weights set by statute. So
I'm sorry, which we.
I would think ODE and the sponsors of the bill. This bill does not change how much an IEP student receives for a weight, how much an ESL student receives for a weight, excuse me, IEP, a special education student, how much a student in poverty, how much a student in a foster family. Okay. Those weights are not changing.
Okay.
The current statute says the state board may determine how aggregate days membership is calculated. That leads to the biggest weight in the state school fund, which is the average daily membership of resident students of a district. And so the state board said, we're going to create a little bit of clarity and try to create, you know, if we have part-time programs, part-time students.
Okay.
The way the bill is currently worded, I have not had a chance to really look at the amendments in depth, but the dash one amendments, but the way the bill is currently worded, there's a little concern that it won't change the state board's ability to pass rules on how average daily membership and aggregate days membership is calculated, but it may prevent, if the intent is to prevent the state board from doing the tens, the introduced version of the bill would also eliminate the ability to the current rules of, you know, part-time programs, homeschool programs, and that sort of thing. I don't know if that was clear and concise. I apologize. I'm happy to try again.
I'll study the bill more. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Hack?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Correct me if I'm wrong, but as complex as the ADMW is extremely complex, and you folks deal with that all the time on a full-time basis, and my concern would be that if that comes back to us to deal with as far as figuring out what is best in calculating the weights, I've even worked, you know, in a school district, and I know how complex that system can be, and I have a hard time understanding it. And so I would feel a real heavy weight on myself to take that work on when you folks are out on the ground actually dealing with this and are the experts in this. So I would feel that we should proceed with extreme caution in taking that away from you, because you know what's happening and what's best. Am I understanding that clearly from you? I mean, this is really a complex situation of circumstance, and messing with how that's calculated can really create some serious issues. Am I wrong?
Chair Dory, Representative Hack, I don't think you're wrong. I think the legislature has realized that there's two levels to the state school fund formula. There's the one level that says we believe and we know that what's best for the weights is to set the weights in statute. So you set the ESL weight.
And we did that, correct?
You have done that. But you have also created some flexibility in the weights. For example, just in 2013, you passed a bill that gave the State Board of Education the ability to adopt a different poverty standard than what was being used, because that poverty standard was really out of date. It was out of date by like 13 years.
Correct.
So you have, the legislature has also realized that as a policy level, sometimes things change and there needs to be some flexibility. And so you have given in statute the state board the opportunity to pass rules. The question then becomes, if those rules go too far, then that would become an issue for the state legislature. But again, you have given that discretion, and right now the rules have set up the part-time programs that we have right now.
Follow up. Mm-hmm. So, but we do have statute that we've determined what the ADMW is going to be, but we've also given you, who are on the ground doing the work, the flexibility to know what's best for districts. And has that system, in your mind, failed, or is it working successfully?
Chair Dory, Representative Hack, I think with input from stakeholders, I think it is working.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Springer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I'm trying to synthesize what I'm hearing here. Mm-hmm. You have concerns, the department has concerns about the bill as it's written, mm-hmm. but not concerns of the concept, or you do have concerns about the concept?
So, Chair Dory, Representative Springer, when you say concerns about the concept, I'm not sure the bill as it's written does what it wants to do. And that's the concern, is that it says, as I read the mm-hmm. as I read this, the bill.
Here.
Thank you. You know, nothing in this section allows the superintendent board to make or authorize a calculation of aggregate ACE membership on the basis of a fraction program, except as specified in ORS 327006. Well, ORS 327006 gives the state board the authority to make those rules. So, I don't know what it's precluding at that point.
Okay.
And that's the concern. So, again, I haven't seen the amendments in depth. I did see them briefly before the meeting. I don't feel competent to comment on them just yet.
Thank
Follow
you.
Up on that?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. That helps me a lot. And maybe I have a slightly different take. No, I don't maybe. I do have a slightly different take on this. I think there's been pretty clear direction from this legislative body on how to not just weight, but count students.
Mm-hmm.
And we can argue if it works or it doesn't work, and I guarantee you we can find somebody to argue both points on every single day of the week. And I was part of the task force that just looked at this, and we all came together and scratched our heads and basically came up with don't change much, because we haven't come up with a better alternative.
That said, I hope that we as a body don't miss the opportunity to give clear direction on halftime, what halftime is, those kinds of things. I have recently become increasingly concerned about rulemaking authority and certainly rule adoption at the state board level. And frankly, the state board's not in the trenches. They're part of the executive branch also making rules. So I think as we move forward here, I just put on the record, that's a caution I have, and I'm not reticent to be somewhat prescriptive in that. I think there's a difference between saying, here's the path we want you to go on, and here are some specific ways that you get to decide how to get there, but we want to be clear on the direction and the path that we want you to go on.
I think that was a comment.
Yes, it was.
Okay, thank you very much. I was going to go to them. Representative McLean.
I appreciate your answer. You have the amendment now?
Yes, I do.
And so what the amendment there says that it allows exemption from existing rules and statutes. Is that the one you've got?
I do not see anything about exempting rules and statutes. It just, the way I see it, is it reads, so take out sub A and say aggregate days of membership on the basis of a fraction of a program, except as one half of a program or otherwise specified by statute. Again, going back to the statute specifies rulemaking authority under 327.006.
Okay. And, I mean, but you were talking about the two levels, and I think I agree with you. And to Representative Hack's issue, I don't think anybody here wants to be the statistician or the person that's doing all of the recording or anything like that. We're not looking for your job. I promise. But the situation is, I think that, so I'm with you, Representative Hack. But Representative Springer said something very important, too. And that is, there's two levels, which you indicated in that answer. And the two levels, we don't want your job, but we want our job. And our job is that we want to be very direct about the fact that we're going to be involved when we start talking about that formula and any changes that are made to it. So, I mean, that's all this does, in my estimation. So I appreciate your answers. And when you got to the two levels, I think it all was clicking in as far as what the words were I was reading. So thank you.
Okay, Representative Hack.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I agree with that, and I agree with what Representative Springer said. We do have a job to hold you accountable, and we need to do that. I do see that there's a subsequent referral to revenue. And since we need to be mindful of dollars spent, do we know if this is going to cost districts money to do this? What's going on with that?
Chair Dory, Representative Hack. The bill as defined, I'm not sure, would cause a significant impact to districts. And also, based on the testimony earlier, is to prevent future impacts to districts. So it really tries to maintain the status quo. If new amendments come out or concerns are worked through such that current rules are affected and current part-time program, coding and everything is affected, that would be an impact to districts because they'd have to change to follow the statutes and rules that have been adopted.
Follow up. Please. So, thank you. So, am I to understand correctly then that there's a possibility that, because at one point you said that all districts are doing it the same, so all of the part-time considerations are all the same, but it depends on the hours that they set. So if we say that a standard is going to be set that part-time equals this, and some districts are considered a part-time different hours, so to speak, some districts could be fiscally impacted then.
Chair Dory, Representative Hack, that is correct. If you start setting those limits and districts are out, districts don't have that part-time, so such that they would receive less ADM, or they had more of those part-time such that they would receive more, you would start to create a little bit of a winners and losers situation and have a fiscal impact and financial impact to the districts.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions of this panel? Okay, thank you very much. We appreciate it. Okay, next we have Chuck Bennett and Morgan Allen.
Thank
Thank you, Chair Doherty, members of the committee. For the record, Morgan Allen here on behalf of the Oregon School Boards Association, a strong supporter of the bill. And I appreciate Mr. Elliott, as someone who used to come to this committee for 4 years as a representative of the Department of Education. I understand what it's like to get lots of questions, and hopefully I can bring a little clarity to this. I think the committee's right. So the state board currently has the authority to change the definition of full and part-time. They don't have the ability to say, you know, a student is 1.0 or a student's 1.25 or 1.5. But when you start getting into what defines full and part-time, what the proposal was from the State Board of Education currently, under the current rule, there are two things. There's either half-time, so the base weight, that base 1.0 ADMW that every kid gets is either 0.5 or 1.0. And that's based on either your half-time, or if you're half-time or less, you get a half weight. If you're half-time or more, you get a 1.0 weight. What the state board proposed doing was changing that so there's a 0.1 weight, a 0.2 weight, a 0.3 weight, all the way up through 0.9. So there would be 10 base weights. And so, for example, our biggest concern was, let's say you have a student on an IEP. Instead of getting and I'm just going to use the average numbers. I think the 1.0 ADMW is somewhere around $6,800 this biennium. So every kid starts out at $6,800. But let's say the IEP says the kid can only go to school a quarter of the school day. They have a severe disability and they can only come in for, let's say, a quarter of the school day. Under that proposal, the district would only get a quarter of that base funding. They would not get $6,800 for that kid. They would have got, my math brain's not working, but whatever 25% of $6,800 is for that 1.0 weight. So it would be a significant loss of revenue in the instance of IEP. And that's just one example where we had some problems with it. And I think to kind of, you know, wrap it up, So you'd have this weird situation. You'd actually be getting a smaller amount of the base weight, but you'd still be getting the full 0.5 or 0.25 or 0.5. This only impacted that base weight. But that's a serious concern. So instead of having two weights, you're either a full or part-time student. You either get half the money or you get all the money. You could get 10% of the money all the way in 10% increments through 100%. So you could have some students who are only getting 70% of the base weight. Some kids are getting 40% of the base weight. Some kids are getting 80% of the base weight. So think about the high school kid. Let's say it's your last, you're a senior in high school. Just for ease of math, because you already heard I have a challenged math brain. Just for ease of math, let's say a full-time schedule at your high school is 5 classes, and you're a senior, and you've already got enough credits to graduate. So you take 4 classes, and you work in the afternoon. Under the state board proposal, the district would have only got 80% of the base funding for that kid. So again, that's a concern for us. So there's all kinds of different ways it would have potentially seriously impacted how the base, the 1.0 that every student has in the district, it could have changed that. And every kid could potentially be different depending on their schedule. And again, our concerns were kids on IEPs and other circumstances. So we have no problem. Would agree with Mr. Elliott. We don't want to take away the board's authority to determine what's part-time for homeschooling programs or some of these other things. But this is a big deal. This is the weight, the base weight in the formula. And the state board was proposing what we considered a fairly radical change to how that works. And we don't think they should have that authority. We think that resides with the legislature. Mm-hmm. And again, this is different than the poverty weight. So Mr. Elliott, I think, has done a good job before explaining how that poverty weight changed. But the board doesn't have the authority to say poverty goes from 0.25 to 0.5. The board has the authority to talk about the characteristics and the data that goes into how you calculate it, not whether or not it's a quarter weight. In this instance, the board wanted to change the base weight for basically potentially every kid in the system, depending on how much time they were attending in their schedule. So we have some big concerns with that, and we think that power resides appropriately with the legislature.
Yeah, thank you.
Madam Chair and Committee, my name is Chuck Bennett. I'm with the Confederation of Oregon School Administrators. We also strongly support this bill. I think Morgan has laid out a perfect description of what this problem looks like. You all have just gone through a debate over school funding, the level to go into the state school fund. As you can imagine, I hope, when you hear 0.1, 0.2, 0.3, 0.4, 0.5, 0.6, 0.7, 0.8, 0.9, and 0.10, this caused a firestorm among school districts when it was suggested by the state board, because it results in a really substantial destabilization of funding for districts. You know, yes, we'd like to have the largest possible state school fund, but we'd also like to have the most predictable distribution of that fund possible. This threw it all out as far as we were concerned. We believe it, or at least we heard from school districts about what they anticipated to be substantial fiscal impact at the local level as they tried to calculate, looking at their students' characteristics, their students' attendance data over time. What would this do to us? And, you know, they're not math challenged, but they had some real trouble trying to work their way through this stuff, trying to determine student by student by student, based on their hourly attendance, how those funds would be distributed. I guess the final concern I have, and I actually thought about bringing a bill, and then I thought better of it, just because I didn't want to muddy the water. There was a really troubling set of comments that went along with the discussion of this whole proposal for me, which was what felt like a determination by the state board that they feel no compelling requirement that they review their rules for fiscal impact on local school district. And I hope at some point, and maybe looking at the short session, we can spend some time with them, with the Department of Education staff, and get a real clarification for that board what the fiscal impacts are and what their responsibilities are toward local school districts when they take up some of these issues. Because this one was a very big deal out in the field. I don't know if you all heard about it. Probably not. We did. Yeah. And we heard about it probably at the same amount of volume and concern that you all heard about the state school fund. And this was a very, very big deal over the past year. So I hope you will take a close look at this. I haven't had a chance to review Ms. Wimmer's amendments, but I assume that she has taken this issue on squarely, and we're supportive of them.
Okay, fine. Questions? Okay. 1, 2, 3. McLean, Reardon, Springer.
Well, to your comments, that really helped. I appreciate that. And I was just thinking about the one student that I had in class last year, first term, that was with me for a full, you know, all-day school day. And then second term, she decided to go to some homeschooling for half the day. And then she decided to go over to the community college for one class period and then come back for another class period at the end of the day. So I would be real interested to see what that was, 4, 5, 6. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah.
Representative Reardon.
I got it.
You got it. Representative Springer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, point of clarification, I think that I heard, and Michael might shout at me here, maybe I heard wrong, but I thought I heard, regardless if a person supports or does not support the concept, that the language in lines 13 and 14 confused the issue. I'm kind of looking for a head nod. So do you feel that confusion exists and we still need to be looking at that to get to the point that at least some of us would want to be? I don't like expanding the board's authority on this at all. I'm very adamantly opposed to that. So I want to make sure that if we can pass this bill, that we get it right.
Just quite simply, Michael Elliott is the pro from Dover on this stuff. We would listen ourselves, and I'm sure Ms. Wimmer will too, very carefully to any suggestions he makes that to improve the bill and make it clear that it's accomplishing the goals of the bill sponsors.
And Representative Finger, from the OSBA perspective, we understand the concerns about the part-time programs and other stuff and how they calculate that. We have no issues with that. It's, again, this was talking about changing the base weight and how you calculate that. So everyone starts out at 1, and depending on 0 through 100% of the hours of the day, you could get that funding in tenths increments. And that is a big concern.
That's base weight.
And we think that that authority they should not have.
I agree.
Thank you. Representative Hack and Representative Brano.
I just wanted to say thank you, and I get it. It makes absolute sense now, and so understandable. I'm just curious if the ORS, the statute itself, needs to be clarified as well.
Again, Representative Hack, we would trust Mr. Elliott and the folks at OD, and we could have a reasonable conversation with them and figure out how to make sure it's not impacting those other types of programs he was talking about. We're really concerned about the 1.0 weight. And I think if it may even, we just may need to put in statute that halftime or less is a half of a weight, and mm-hmm. halftime or more mm-hmm. is a full weight. So there's no confusion. Perhaps we need to go that direction.
Thank you. Yeah.
Thank you, Representative Barreto.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I'm getting back to Representative McLean's comment on the different throughout the year, you know, how that changes. So I think she asked the question earlier, how many times a year that this is calculated, you know, does it change every semester, every quarter?
Chair Doherty and Representative Barreto, I'm ashamed. I have to turn in my ODE lifetime membership card. I forgot the answer to that question. I'm sure Mr. Elliott knows. If I remember, I mean, it's basically they calculate it, I think, once or twice a year. And I know that if a student misses school for 10 consecutive days, that's an automatic drop, so the funding stops. And there are a few other mechanisms as well.
Maybe Mr. Elliott can come up and answer that question. As opposed to we're having hand signals here. And after that, you may take his card away.
And reprimand him for not listening. Chair Doherty, for the record, my name is Michael Elliott with Department of Education. The ADM is collected four times a year. For funding purposes, it is a second period in annual ADM that goes into that calculation, but ADM is collected four times a year, so districts can track attendance and membership throughout the year.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you.
Card,
any
please.
Other questions? Okay, thank you very much. Okay, we have no one else signed up for House Bill 3493. Anyone else want to speak on it? Okay, if not, we close the public hearing on...
Yeah.
Oh, wait.
Whoops. I open it back up. Yes.
Chair Doherty, members of the committee, Emily Nazarov with Oregon Department of Education. And I just wanted to make an important clarification about the state board's role in the TENS proposal. The TENS proposal was something that was proposed by ODE, by staff. The state board's involvement was we presented to them, I think in October, an overview of what this TENS proposal would look like with the intent of bringing back a series of proposed rules in December with an adoption vote in January. And it was after that October meeting that staff decided to pull the proposal based on the reasons that Michael outlined for you. So we don't have any real indication of what the state board would have done or said if we had brought these rules forward. So I just wanted to clarify.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much. Okay, with that, we close the public hearing on House Bill 3493, and I'm going to open up a concurrent a public hearing on House Bill 2411 and House Bill 2412. And so it's Michael. I just replaced him. Richard, would you like to read that, please?
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2411 changes the name of the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission to the Professional Educator Standards Boards. It updates terms for teacher education programs and institutions, and it streamlines licensure structures for teachers and administrators. It increases the maximum amount allowed for fees and issuance of license. For 2411, the committee has been asked to consider the -1 amendments, which reduce the proposed fee cap from the introduced measure. And House Bill 2412 removes outdated provisions and updates terminology related to teachers. It removes requirements that the superintendents of education service districts have additional certification. It eliminates certain requirements from becoming an approved educator preparation provider or an approved educator preparation program. And the committee has been asked to consider the -4 amendments, which were mentioned earlier, about which also require the TSPC to adopt standards related to dyslexia education programs and removes references from the introduced measure to the Minority Teacher Act of 1991.
Okay. With that, we have Vicki Chamberlain, Alan Contro, and Jared Mason Gear. Do you want to come up now or later? Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Whatever. Okay.
Madam Chair, members of the record, members of the committee, for the record. I didn't think I sat there that long. My name's Vicki Chamberlain. I'm the Director of Teacher Standards and Practices Commission. And with me today, I have a commissioner, Alan Contreras, who's one of our public members who served in the Office of Degree Authorization for a number of years and asked to come be with us today. Starting with House Bill 2411, the name change of the commission was actually the least important provision of this bill. Somehow it ended up at the top of the summary. The primary reasons for House Bill 2411 are to address two issues. One of them is a significant drop in revenue that we had over the course of the last 3 years that required us to cut staff about 30% last biennium. And I think I mentioned this a little when I came in and did an overview of the commission early in the session. During the end of the last budget cycle, the Legislative Ways and Means Committee directed us to come back with a fee proposal and a fee increase. And in order to get a fee increase to increase revenue, which comes exclusively from licensure fees, we have to increase the cap in the statutes. Originally, we had proposed that the cap be $500 because when we were running scenarios for funding, running based on licenses that are 3 and 5 years old, it looked like our fees were going to have to be somewhere in the neighborhood of about $300, which is actually comparable to other licensure boards. But as it turns out, we had a slight increase in volume over the last biennium, and we were able to make a proposal for the fees to only increase from what today is currently $100 for an application to $140. All of that is contained in our budget bill that's in Ways and Means. So one of the amendments proposes to drop that statutory fee cap from $500 to $350, which allows some flexibility in the future if the commission needs to come back for a fee increase for budget increases without having to change the statutes. The $40 per application, we are projecting right now raise about $1.1 million in revenue for the agency. Our agency currently has fewer than 20 FTE, and this would purchase 6 FTE and allow us to catch up our licensure backlog, which has only been behind for the last 24 months. So if I had been sitting here exactly 2 years ago, I would have been able to tell you that for 6 or 8 months, we had the licensure turnaround at 20 days. So that's how quickly a reduction in staff impacted our agency. The second need for the fee increase is to add investigators. The commission has no control over the complaints that come into the agency, and the complaints have hovered above 250 for the last 5 years, which are significant. How long it takes to investigate a complaint just can't be predicted. It just depends on the conduct that's being reported. But I will tell you that about 58% of all the complaints that come in are dismissed. Under our statutes, every complaint that comes into the office must be investigated at some level, which is a pretty good threshold and a good plan to have, except it takes a significant amount of staff to rifle through all those complaints. And we get everything from parents unhappy with somebody not being played on varsity enough to really bona fide concerns about whether educators have been too heavy-handed in terms of handing out discipline or issues like that. Our biggest level of complaints right now appear to be stress-related in the classroom, anger management issues or conflict issues, or because class sizes are so large, ability to manage classrooms. There are things you would expect when cuts have been going on in schools and classes have been getting bigger and everyone's under stress. And the accountability measures around the evaluations and the connecting performance to test scores are also becoming more evident. We've received more complaints and concerns around how tests are administered with students. When educators become apparently concerned about their performance being linked to the outcome of how those children perform, it's just, for some, a little too, attractive to want to assist a little too much. It's not rampant, but it's evident, and it's definitely an issue that we've seen in the last 3 years that we didn't see in the prior decade. At any rate, I think that addresses the fee increase issue. We're absolutely certain with this fee increase we'll be able to bring the level of service up for the educators that we provide service to the level that they would expect to get for the fees that they're paying. The next issue in 2411 is For the last 2.5, almost 3 years, the commission has looked at redesigning the licensure program, and this is very important. That's why the name change is absolutely nominal compared to this. The commission was created in 1965, and at that time, a new licensure system was introduced. And when I was a teacher, we had basic licenses and standard teaching licenses, and that continued until 1999. Well, pardon me, the commission came to the legislature in the late 1990s and asked for a new licensure system, a tiered licensure system, and they introduced initial licenses and continuing licenses, but they didn't sunset the old licenses. And what happened, probably should have been foreseeable back in the 1990s, was that we had two different licensure systems running side by side in buildings with two different scopes of authority on endorsements and grade levels they can teach, and it became a mess that I inherited in 2002. So in 2012, we started a relook at the entire licensure system, and what the statutory changes in 2411 will allow us to do is abolish both of the existing systems, create one licensure system, move everybody onto the new licenses, and get everybody all on the same page. All elementary teachers can teach the same kids the same content, and there just won't be any issues about that. And then finally, the name change. What I provided to you in the testimony, just very quickly, is a list of other professional educator standards boards like Oregon's that are either called education standards boards, boards of examiners, or professional educator standards boards. We license administrators, school counselors, and school psychologists. So the word teacher in the name is a misnomer now in terms of being a professional educator. So in summary, even though this has an increase in our fee caps, it does not have a fiscal impact as the bill itself. All of that is handled in our budget bill in Senate Bill 5538. And Alan, did you have anything you'd like to add?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Alan Contreras. I'm a public member of TSPC right now. I spent 12 years as the head of the Oregon Office of Degree Authorization. Representative Springer has seen me here with that hat on in the past. The only thing I want to do is reiterate what Vicki mentioned about the complaints that come in and the volume issues. It's always very hard to predict how many complaints you're going to get, how long it's going to take to handle a particular complaint. And the I have the same issue at ODA, is you can't charge a fee to somebody who is reporting wrongdoing, which is unlike you charging a fee to somebody who's applying for a license. So you have to have a way to cover that out of the rest of your revenue stream. And I think that the fee structures Vicki's talking about would help get us where we need to be on that issue, and that's something to keep in mind. Too far, too close. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm a little out of practice coming up here and doing this. So I don't have anything else to add at this point. I'd be happy to answer any questions anybody
okay.
might have.
Do you have any questions? Representative Springer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So the bill's really doing three things: the fee change, which is a ways and means issue, not an ed policy issue, the name change, and then the redesign. I'm weighing my words carefully because I sit on ways and means, EDSA, and we've been looking at the budget, we've been looking at TSPC's key performance measures, we've been looking at the targets, and actually there's been a request on the behalf of the commission to lower the customer service targets because there's a real struggle there. I can't help but ask the question, is this a good time, regardless of how good the redesign could or would be, and especially if it's a really good idea, is this the right time when we're wrestling with a lot of issues down there right now of opening up the envelopes and processing things and going to an online version? How can this be a good time?
Madam Chair, Representative Springer, a good time for?
To be looking at a redesign, to be looking at a name change, to be looking at wholesale changes.
Madam Chair, Representative Springer, yes, I think it is the best time. The change in the licenses would coincide with the online application system. It would be very expensive to set that online application system up to accommodate the two side-by-side systems now, and the new system would reduce the complexity of the questions that get answered, the questions that will be asked, by having one uniform license for everybody. We're proposing that the licensure structure roll out January 1, 2016, which gives us 6 months to give notice to the field. And then the proposed rollout is that the new licenses will be issued as people come in the door to renew. So it isn't like just everybody all at once will be flipped, you know, creating a new workload that would be really difficult to accommodate. The 6 months would also allow us to get staffing up to speed in time to handle that turnover. So the name change, whether it happens or not, doesn't change the work of the commission, and that becomes primarily a stationary issue. But the redesign, I think, is critical to help us reduce confusion in the field.
Thank you. So, correct me if I'm wrong, I think that the average processing time for a complaint is 10 months. Is that what was reported out in Ways and Means? I want to say 10 or 12. I think it was 10 months.
Madam Chair, Representative Springer, the average time from the time that the complaint comes in the door to the time the investigation's completed and goes to the commission is about 10 months.
Okay. And certainly I realize there's factors. A police report can factor into that and different things, but that's not the rule. That's not the majority of the complaints. And we've talked about the processing time of new applications. And it's just taking a long time, or returning phone calls is taking a long time, and processing the paper and opening up the envelope and having somebody else stand there and watch the check get processed for financial purposes, to be safe. How can the department facilitate doing this at this point? I realize all licensees are not going to come in at the same time, but we've been hearing a lot of conversation about the workload and the staff, not having the staff to be able to do it. How is this going to be absorbed? I realize you're looking at some additional positions, which is again a Ways and Means conversation. We haven't had any conversations about this, and I would love that. How this can be facilitated and be successful, adding a big thing on top of something that's kind of struggling to move forward, how we can expect success and not set you up for failure in this.
Madam Chair, Representative Springer, I believe that the staff is very much aware of the proposed changes. The characteristics of the licenses don't change as significantly. It's I don't think quite as big a lift, and I understand your concern. We are launched in terms of working with our online application provider, and a start date of September 1st is out there, which takes three people automatically off of paper. We have already reorganized staff since our budget hearings, and we have more people on the phones. And we have cut the email backlog by 50% since our budget hearings by reorganizing. I want you to know we've taken this very seriously, and we're poised to roll this out in a really sequential, thoughtful way that won't back licenses up like they were when I arrived here in 2002, which was 8 months to process an application. So I understand your concerns. I believe that we are up to the task.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions of this panel? Okay, we're going to temporarily close this and then reopen it later so we can vote on a work session. So Jared, we may hold on to you for another 5 or 10 minutes. So with that, I'm going to temporarily close the public hearing on House Bills 2411 and 2412, and open up a work session on House Bill 2847.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2847 requires ASPIRE programs to annually provide financial aid instruction to high school students and their families. The committee has been asked to consider the Dash 3 amendments, which clarifies that instruction should be in conjunction with the existing ASPIRE programming, and it removes language requiring inclusion of families. The committee has an updated SMS in paper form on the dais just to make sure everything is clear, and the measure contains a subsequent referral to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means.
Okay, thank you. Representative McEwen.
Chair Doherty, Vice Chair Springer, and Frederick, members of the committee. I'm Katty McEwen. I represent House District 9 down on the South Coast. And I am just so pleased to be here today to talk about a program that is very near and dear to my heart. I'd like to start out by thanking Representative Springer for the great support she has been for the ASPIRE program for many, many, many years in her district. To give you a little bit of background, in a former life, I worked for the Oregon Student Assistance Commission as a supervisor and interim manager of the ASPIRE program through the Oregon Student Assistance Commission. So for me, this is like coming home. I was pleased to see the bill that Representative Doherty and Representative Johnson brought forward and codifying some of the things that ASPIRE is designed to do, which is to provide information for students and their families on how best to find a path for a student to access an education and training beyond high school of whatever type it is that they choose, whether it's access to apprenticeship programs, access to licensed private career schools, community colleges, four-year colleges, in-state, out-of-state, public, private, whatever it is that works for that student to reach their goals to become productive citizens. And codified in this bill just indicates that each year the program will provide financial aid instruction to high school students and their families. I developed the trainings for a number of these workshops over the years when I was working for ASPIRE, so I'm very familiar with the content. And just codifying this that says that financial aid piece will be a part of it is something that's already done, but this says it will be done in any school that has an ASPIRE program. And the reason that I was interested in the Dash 3 amendment was a couple of aspects that I wanted to just beef up a little bit. There are two programs in the state that work very well for students and their families to begin to save for the cost of whatever education and training it is beyond high school that they choose to do. And the one that you've heard a lot about is the Oregon College Savings Network, the 529 plan. It's very well known and clearly understood. It's well advertised, and people know that it's there. But when I read the bill, I noticed that there was a piece missing that I wanted to make sure that we took note of. And it's a program called the Individual Development Account, or an IDA, which is not as well known. And so I wanted to make sure that when ASPIRE is out working in our high schools with the parents and students that this was a part of the training that they did. IDA is a program that's overseen by the Oregon Housing and Community Services Department. In the Oregon Department of Revenue. And it's an interesting program. It was created in 1999 by the Oregon Legislature. And it brings state agencies, private nonprofit, and tribal partners and private contributors together to create opportunities for our residents of Oregon who are have a modest net worth. And what the program does is it allows a participant to set up an account where they can save for one of a number of things. It can be purchasing a home. It can be fulfilling an education goal, which is what I would like to highlight in this particular amendment, developing a small business, restoring a home, or doing renovations of a home, or purchasing equipment to support employment. It's very specific what they can save for. They set a goal. Residents 12 years of age and older who have low incomes or modest net worth can apply to be a part of this program. And if they are, once their goal is met, every dollar saved by the participant is matched by the initiative, and it's typically 3-to-1. So it's a really great opportunity for our low-income or modest-income families with children who are coming through school to begin to save for college. Other things, too, but specifically for educational purposes.
So I just wanted to codify that in this bill to make sure it's something that's on the radar at a high level as the financial aid work that we do with making sure FAFSAs are filled out and that deadlines are met for filing applications for school, that kids are looking at work study, that they're taught how to be very good consumers of how their very limited dollars work when they're pursuing education beyond high school. So I thought it was worth taking a run at getting this added to the bill. I appreciate that. And again, thank you, Mark, to Representative Johnson, has been a strong supporter of this program for a number of years. And again, thank you, Vice Chair Springer, for your support. And I'm happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Okay. Are there any questions? Okay, thank you. This is one that we're working on. So
it
is. This is just clarification.
You know, and I might make one more comment, if you don't mind. I noticed in the original bill, in Section 1, Number 3, it's line 19 and 20, it says, each year the program shall provide financial aid instruction to high school students and their families. I notice in the amendment that it deletes the line "and their families." And I would just like to highlight that. As the Aspire supervisor that went out and did these trainings in high schools and community colleges across the state for a number of years, one of the important issues was being able to not only go into a high school and train volunteers to work with kids, which is what my job was. It was to train the high school staff and the volunteer staff to work with students. But when I went out and did a public event, which was a college 101 training to teach people how to work in this program, or scholarship search apply and compete presentation, which I did numerous times in school gyms all over the state with lots of people in attendance, having families understand this information was also very important. So I would like to just note that you might want to consider a dash 4 that would put students and their families back in, because a lot of times what the Aspire program does is it's doing a more public event that includes those parents also. So I just wanted to bring that to your attention.
Okay, thank you. Representative Springer.
Yeah. I have a comment, but a brief question, and I have no idea where this came from, but there's a belief that that amendment might be for me, or the families piece might be for me. It's not. I think families are great to have in there. I'd like to see that added back.
Okay.
Frankly, but if it holds things up, I don't know that we need to do that.
Well,
maybe the Senate.
We'll move it today.
We can move it in the Senate.
Yeah. I'll speak to my good Senator Roblin about
yes.
that.
Would yeah,
that
and I bet sufficient? We could get families back in.
Yeah. May I follow up?
Yes. Thank you. And you don't need to come up, Bob, but I think it would be really helpful, and we discussed this in Ways and Means last week or this week or whatever day that was. It would maybe be helpful for everybody up here to know the school districts or the schools in their house districts that have Aspire programs and send us the contact information. So if we felt inspired to volunteer or to call local folks in our district and encourage them, and I found that they have a hard time saying no, encourage them to be volunteers, we could make a very tangible investment in this program.
Is this a PSA?
No, it is a shameless plug.
Okay, good. Vice Chair Springer.
I never apologize for shameless plugs for kids.
Thank you.
Vice Chair Springer, if I may, I spent many, many years doing exactly that, and you can be as shameless as you like, and I will stand right beside you and join you. I think one of the great places to go for legislators is to contact all of their school board members who are in districts or in high schools that have Aspire programs. They make wonderful, wonderful volunteers, as do legislators. It's a program that once you become involved in, it's very hard to let it go. In fact, my chief of staff right now was a student that I mentored when she was 15 at my local high school, and I have many, many students because I still mentor one student a year because I just can't seem to let go of this work. And I can assure you it's some of the most rewarding volunteer work that you will ever do. And if you have children, you will learn so much about this process that when your kids graduate from high school, you will be an expert.
And I know this is a shameless plug, but I'm going to move you on
beyond
here.
High school.
Thank you, Chair Doran.
Thank you very much. Any other questions before she goes? Thank you very much. Okay, good suggestion. That gentleman will get the information to us. I'm sure you will do that.
Oh, he wrote it down.
Okay. Representative Frederick.
Madam Chair, Chair Doherty, I move to adopt the Dash 3 amendments to HB 2847, dated March 20th, 2015.
Okay, Representative Frederick moves to adopt the Dash 3 amendments to House Bill 2847, dated March 20th, 2015. Is there any discussion? Okay, see none. Is there any objection? Oh, Representative Barreto.
Actually, what Representative McEwen mentioned about their families. What was your comment on that as far as it would go to the Senate?
What it is when this goes over to the Senate and Senator Roblin's committee, then they will deal with that amendment at that time.
Thank you.
And I'm sure that Representative McEwen, it will happen.
It will happen.
Okay, any other further discussion? Okay, is there any objection? Okay, seeing none, the amendments are adopted.
Chair Doherty, I move House Bill 2847 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay. Representative Frederick moves House Bill 2847 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any further discussion? Okay. Seeing none. Tia, could you call the roll, please?
Aye.
Representative McClain.
Aye.
Representative Paluso.
Aye.
Representative Reardon.
Aye.
Representative Wilson.
Aye.
Representative Barreto?
Yes.
Vice Chair Frederick?
Yes.
Vice Chair Springer?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, with that, the motion passes. And we will assign Representative Johnson, Representative McEwen to carry, and I'm sure that you will speak on it.
Maybe not.
So those are the carriers. Okay, with that, I close the work session on House Bill 2847 and reopen a public hearing on 2411 and 2412. Jared Mason Gear, please.
Thank you, Chair Doherty, members of the committee. For the record, Jared Mason Gear from the Oregon Education Association, representing 42,000 professional educators across the state. Just quickly, wanted to voice our support for House Bill 2411. You will note that there is a fee increase that will largely fall on the educators that we represent. We believe that it is time for that increase. In fact, in some cases, probably overdue. We are hopeful that that will speed up the process for processing the applications of licensure, and believe that that will be advantageous for our members and everyone concerned. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any questions? Okay, thank you, Jared. Okay, anybody else want to speak on 2411 or 2412? Let me see. Pardon? Oh. Chamberlain?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Vicki Chamberlain, Director of Teacher Standards and Practices Commission. I just wanted to make sure you didn't have any questions on 2412, which was the other bill that we had in front of the committee. The amendments that I had talked about, which remove the Minority Teacher Act and add the dyslexia provisions, were combined in dash fours. My testimony talks about twos and threes, which are now the fours. Okay. So I wanted to make sure that was clear. And just let you know that most of these proposals, not all of them, are to update our statutes, which were written literally in 1965 and have barely been looked at since. I'm wondering if you have any questions. I just want to be sure you had a chance to get answers.
65.
Thank you. Questions on 2411?
I'll just comment. A lot of good things happened in 1965. But
some of us I remember.
It has been 50 years. So.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, my God. Well, I was, okay. Yeah. I won't tell you guys how old I was. But, yeah. Okay. So anyway, so the dash fours are what? compilation of everything else.
And finally, Representative Springer, just to be clear, we will be tackling the redesign issue on a runway of 4 years, not a runway of a few months, that as people come in and renew their licenses, they'll be issued new licenses, just Thank so you know the workload will be spread out.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? Thank you very much for
Thank
the clarification.
You.
Okay, with that, I close the public hearing on House Bill 2411 and 2412.
53.
Anything else? Go to the order?
Right.
Okay. House the order?
Right.
Okay. House. Anything else?